This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report produced by Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Later on, the film industry says no to unionization of parking production assistants and coordinators.
But first,
we'll take a look at a federal complaint filed by Latino and Bangladeshi workers against celebrity chef Danielle Boulon for discrimination based on race and national origin. Mir Mamoon, a Bangladeshi runner at restaurant Danielle, said recently, "There's no question of why we, Bangladeshi and Latino runners and bussers, weren't promoted. It's discrimination. When we made mistakes, we were punished, while white workers were never punished for making those same mistakes." December 4th, workers from restaurant Danielle filed a lawsuit in federal court against their employer, chef Danielle Boulon, and the four-star restaurant at which they worked, restaurant Danielle, for violation of the state and city human rights laws, the Fair Labor Standards Act, and the New York State labor law. The suit was filed on the basis of discrimination on race and national origin. We're joined by Seru Jeraraman with Restaurant Opportunity Center of and who rocks New York.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's deconstruct the suit. First of all, what are some of the duties and responsibilities of the runners and bussers in this very upscale four-star restaurant, Danielle?
Bussers tend to clean up the tables, bring bread and water. Runners are the ones who bring the food to your table.
And the allegation of discrimination, Rock was first acquainted with these issues back in the summer of 2005. Take us back then and give us a sense of what some of the issues were that were raised by the Latino and Bangladeshi runners and bussers.
These workers came to us saying that, you know, they are runners and bussers, but they had actually been training white workers who were hired as runners and bussers initially, but within weeks or a month were promoted above them to be waiters, which is a huge deal because at Restaurant Danielle, as in many fine dining restaurants throughout the city, waiters make more than double what the runners and bussers are making. So the runners and bussers would be Latino, would be Bangladeshi, would be working in the restaurant for 6, 7, 8 years, would be training somebody who had just arrived, who had a lot less experience, would be training them in the menu and the restaurant style, and the white worker would immediately surpass them then to become a waiter above them.
Now, we should mention that Restaurant Danielle is one of, what, 4 or 5?
That's unlike right. There's only five four-star restaurants in New York City. And also, Daniel Boulud, the chef, actually has been named Restaurateur of the Year over and over again. He's a celebrity chef. Everybody thinks the world of him, which is great, except that what's going on at Restaurant Danielle is really the epitome of what's happening industry-wide, which is that there's severe occupational segregation for workers of color, and they're not able to advance to the only living wage jobs in the industry and therefore support their families.
So the indignity of it all, you train somebody else to pass you by.
Right. On top of that, of course, there's tons of racial epithets and abuse. The workers are yelled at. They were called Mexican monkeys and Mexican mafia. The Bangladeshis were, you know, screamed at and punished for things the white workers were never punished for. When you compound that with the indignity, as you said, of not being able to advance to positions where you've trained somebody and they're now above you, it's just too much, and the workers decided to get together and do something about it.
So they train others to surpass them and earn more money. They are subjected to racial abuse, verbal abuse and epithets. So let's go to an earlier period, just before the filing of the lawsuit. It actually looked like there might be some way of settlement outside of litigation, in a manner of speaking, a voluntary consent decree.
Yes.
What happened with that? Because I know at one point it looked like there would be a historic agreement.
That's right. We had approached the restaurant shortly after the workers came to us in the fall of 2005, and the restaurant, seemingly to avoid publicity or litigation, agreed to sit down with us and hammer out an agreement, which we thought was really astounding. We were really happy with the company. They seemed to be doing the right thing. They seemed to want to resolve the issue. We worked with them over a period of 8 months. But in April 2006, they suddenly withdrew from signing the agreement. And the agreement was wonderful. It included things like a EEOC-monitored promotion system, raises for the runners and bussers, training for management, job security. But suddenly the company withdrew, and we found out shortly afterwards that they had been discussing the case and discussing Rock New York with another restaurant company, the Fireman Hospitality Group, where we have 200 workers suing their employer for misappropriated tips, sexual harassment, racial discrimination, and unpaid wages. So unfortunately, it seems as though they hitched their wagon to another restaurant company that did not want to settle, did not want to comply with the law, and what was to be a good resolution didn't come through.
I want to just go back to, it's unfortunate that this agreement unraveled, because the idea of course, compensating for past discrimination by receiving wages is one thing that needs to be looked at in terms of continuing to forge ahead with some form of affirmative action, if you will, to just begin to level the playing field for past discrimination. But in terms of the industry itself, looking at issues of wages and tips and two-tiered employment tracks and denial of promotional opportunities, elaborate on that a bit more so people can really see fleshed out what discrimination means when you're kept in the runner and busser job and not allowed to be promoted.
In this industry, there really are only one set of living wages. Our report behind the kitchen door in 2005 showed that 80% of workers earn poverty-level wages, low wages or below the poverty line. So that 20% of jobs that are living wages, those are exclusively wait staff and above in fine dining restaurants. And there really are living wages. I mean, there's a real opportunity for good living standards in this industry. Some waiters at these fine dining restaurants earn $100,000 to $150,000 a year, some of them more than that. They're really good jobs with really good opportunities to support families. The problem is that most immigrant workers, and 70% of this industry is immigrants, most immigrant workers will work in the industry for 20 years and never be able to advance to those living wage jobs. The top of the ladder for most immigrant workers, unfortunately, is the busser and runner position in a fine dining restaurant. They're simply not able to advance. There's severe occupational segregation. And when we interviewed employers, they were astoundingly blatant. They said, we want pretty faces in the front. We want Miss Oregon. We hire Miss Oregon in the front. We want good-looking people, quote-unquote, good-looking people in the front. And we want hard workers, quote-unquote, in the back. We want people who have a certain, quote-unquote, table talk. An acceptable accent. So a French accent or a European accent is okay. A Bangladeshi or a Spanish accent is not. And what this means for workers is that they're stuck at a bus runner position which may earn $20,000, $30,000, maximum $35,000 a year. And right above them in the positions they're unable to advance to, although they know the menu, they do speak English well, they do know how to be a waiter, they're not able to get to that $75,000, $100,000 job just above them.
So somewhere between Miss Oregon with a French accent are the realities of the industry.
Yeah, and I do want to say one more thing, which is that we really feel like, unfortunately, these restaurants are losing out. You know, the workers that are Miss Oregon and are actors and students and quote-unquote good-looking are not the long-term restaurant industry career workers. They're short-term. There's high turnover among those workers. The folks that are going to be loyal and stay with you for a long time are the immigrant workers that you promote and are grateful for that promotion, and that's their career. The restaurant industry is their career, and there are good employers in this industry. There are good restaurant owners that realize that and actually do better as a result. You know, we really feel strongly. Danny Meyer, we believe, is one of them. Union Square Hospitality Group has a good promotion system. They promote from within, and their workers are loyal.
And, of course, there's the restaurant Colors, which was formed by the workers themselves, and is the only cooperative restaurant of its kind in New York. Well, you know, one of the things, I must be perverse, but I've never been very much moved by French accents and and Ms. Oregon. But aside from that, I definitely would also like to advocate that people get behind the kitchen door pervasive inequality in New York City's thriving restaurant industry from Rock, New York. It's very revealing.
Well, we, as I've said, have found these issues to be prevalent in the industry, and in particular in the two companies where we've got campaigns, which is the Fireman Hospitality Group and Restaurant Danielle. This is a very clear, illegal, unjust issue that's going on in New York City restaurants, racial segregation. It's got to end. It's not acceptable.
Oh, indeed it isn't. And going back to the federal lawsuit, Saru, what is the prayer for relief? What is being requested of the court to remedy these abuses of the state and city human rights law and labor law and so on?
Actually, many of the things that we had won in the original settlement agreement are things that I think a court would award or things that we would be happy with, including an EEOC-monitored promotion system, raises for runners and bussers. In restaurants like this, there's what I call a race tax. These tips are pooled, and there's a what's called a point system, so every position gets a certain number of points. In Restaurant Danielle, captains get 6 points, waiters get 5 points, but for some reason the position right below the runner position, instead of getting 4, gets 3.5, and the busser gets 2.5. So there's this 0.5 race tax because the bussers and runners happen to be all people of color, whereas the waiters and captains are white. So raises for runners and bussers, really training for management so they understand these issues and understand the law so they can stop these racial epithets.
And how will this systemically stop reinforcing the culture of discrimination in the restaurant industry?
I mean, I think the key is promoting internal promotions and creating a system of evaluation where every worker has an equal opportunity to advance and gets notice about positions that are getting open as wait staff. Because one of the big problems is restaurants like Restaurant Danielle will hire from outside, and runners and bussers won't even know that there's an opening or an opportunity to train or become a waiter. And so that's the key, is really opening it up to the runners and bussers and, you know, with an EEOC-monitored promotion system, making sure that it's systematic, based on merit. Everybody has the same chance to become a waiter. Well, for more info, you can call us at 212-343-1771. 212-343-1771.
Saru Jayaraman from Rock, New York. We're with you.
I was born by the river in a little tent, and just like that river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. Oh, yes, there is. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. Oh, yes,
it is. Oh, it is, it is, it is. When you organize and you continue to rally, so we've had some lax periods. We need to go back and put on those thirsty boots and those walking shoes and get out there and make the demands and shift the sands of time. Now we're going to take a look at another strategic issue. We head to lights, cameras, and no action. The film industry says no to unionization of parking, production assistants, and coordinators. And with us is John Johnson, Matthew Ankrum, and the organizer for the UAW, Ted Fang. And we welcome you.
parking production assistants and coordinators, primarily people of color, Caribbean, African American, Latino, and Asian, are currently working on major primetime television productions and over a dozen feature films and numerous commercial production jobs in New York City. These profitable production companies, such as NBC Universal, which produces Law & Order, and the new hit TV show 30 Rock, also benefit from publicly funded tax breaks. So why don't they repay our communities for that benefit by recognizing the rights of parking assistants and coordinators to unionize?
So, gentlemen, this is not a low-salary industry for some.
For some.
You do the footwork. You secure the spots. Hey, come on. And it's supposed to be a liberal industry, after all.
Well, also, you know, like, we are the first ones in and the last ones out. Before a film crew even come to any neighborhood, we are the first ones there with the cone set up, signs out. And we are the ones that are the buffers that takes care of actually talking residents and neighborhood members such as yourself into not being able to park in that area. The industry needs this in a very strong way because of without being able to park their equipment at these spots, they can't film for a day because they can't double park in New York City because of hustle and bustle. So they require us to actually do this job. And at that time, they don't want to recognize the value of our work. And that's a huge problem.
And how do they not recognize the value of your work? What's your pay? Do you get sick days? You get vacation?
Ooh, sick days. What is sick
days? Oh, my God. What did we say
well,
here?
Okay, now.
No, Matthew.
Yeah, now, here we go.
Tell it like it is, brother.
6 days? There's not a such thing as 6 days in the industry with us. There's not a such thing as holiday pay with us. It's like the 4th of July when everybody else is enjoying their 4th of July with their family. We are out there working, taking all the abuse from people. Yeah, and it's just like the other day, one of my guys, they just walked up to say, excuse me, just to remind the person that 8 o'clock they have to be out. The person just raved and ramped and went off on them. Only we representing the people that we work for. So it can't be no road rage, how they say road rage, where we just going to come back and just come back negatively on them because that's not showing no professionalism. But it's like, how much can we take without getting any kind of benefits? Like you said, sick days? Like we said, that's not such a word.
You get sick, and that's your day.
Gotcha.
How long are these days?
Well, they basically, a parking PA will work a mandatory of 12 hours, and that's called a shift. And a 12-hour shift, which is mandatory, they have to be able to be on site, be up and alert, doing their own job in various neighborhoods. So if a parking PA gets sick without holiday pay, without sick pay, he's losing a day of pay.
Wait a minute. You know, come on. You've been on the job 16 years.
Yes.
Right? This is not a short time. And mm-hmm. you've worked on such really poverty jobs as Independence Day, Men in Black 1 and 2, Stuart Little, Third Watch, Sex and the City. I mean, oh, pity the downtrodden employer. Oh, whose back is all burdened and bent, how can they afford to give you folks, and I am being absolutely sarcastic, it blows me away.
The one thing that blows us away all the time is the fact that you have a industry which is everyone around us except for four job titles is unionized. Now that means there's 15 other job titles which is unionized workforce. Now they want to keep our segment as a ununionized workforce. Now, I can't understand that they understand that if the majority is unionized, that means that they want organized workforce. So why is it that our segment, which has over 300 members?
Matthew, how long have you worked on the job?
Basically between 12 and 14 years.
I mean, this is incredible. These are not occasional workers. These are long-term
right.
jobs.
And you know what is so funny is like how you're saying, right, long term, and like how people say, oh, I want to do what you do. And then I turn around and ask them, I said, excuse me, do you get sick days? Yes. Are you in a union where you get benefits? Yes. Then I think you need to stay at the job that you at because when I go to a hospital, I have to pay. And it also works on our families for the long hours that we work and everything being out there. It's like Mark says, we out there before they even think about coming out there.
And what's the money?
It depends on what the production one pays. But production will shop around for the cheapest person to do it for them.
A typical shift for a parking PA, the pay for a shift would be anywhere from $115 to $125 for a 12-hour shift.
And that's not counting the money that you're spending outside to eat. That's not even talking about the toll monies that you have to pay to go from one bowl to another bowl. And the gas, prices going up on everything.
And what time in the morning do you get to your job? What, 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning?
It varies on what the shift arm of the coordinator has. Some might be 4 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. Some might be 6 in the morning to 6 at night. Some might be from 8 in the morning to
8 in the morning. 12 hours.
Yeah, but it's 12 hours.
Covers 12 hours.
Regardless. And the thing is, a 40-hour week, that's nothing.
And there's no overtime pay in this. See, they work on a flat 12 hours for the same rate of pay. Once you do 12 hours for 5 days, you're over 40 hours. There's no overtime rate. That's why we constantly say that the system has to change, and we're trying to change the system immediately.
So who are the employers that you're dealing with, and have they reacted in any kind of visible way to this unionization drive?
The union drive started back in May, and we had reached out to the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, which represents the studios in labor negotiations on union contracts. We also wrote to each of the...
Which studios are we talking about? Who are the big ones?
We're talking to NBC Universal, Paramount Pictures, Sony Pictures, Walt Disney, ABC, CBS.
All the big ones, yeah.
Yeah, the only one major entertainment studio that responded was NBC Universal, and they said they were discussing the matter internally. Since about late June, early July, we haven't heard anything since.
They're still discussing it internally.
Yeah, they're still discussing it. Yeah,
exactly. They've been discussing it.
But you didn't mention the good stuff. You didn't also mention why you've been there 16, you've been there 12 years. You must have job security and promotional opportunities. I'm sure you're out there flirting with Meryl Streep and all those folks. Come on.
you want to call those benefits where it's like we there. Our benefits is trying to find a bathroom. That's one of the benefits that
and
we
no
have
real
to go
job and no job security.
No job security.
No
job security.
And no promotional no opportunities.
Nothing. So everything.
No
is,
step system.
No. To see this segment.
You come in at a fixed rate, and that's
there it is.
It.
And that's what they want to keep
years,
you at.
16 years, 12 years.
That's
There's
what
no
they
way
want to hold you.
Try to train for one of the other jobs.
Oh no, no.
Surely you can't.
There's no training. Come on, now I've been here 16 years. What have training been offered? There's no training been offered. The only thing is, they want you to keep you right where you are, because this segment of 300 workers, they see them as an invisible workforce. We come out there every day, rain, sleet, or snow. These guys are out there. And this industry do not want to recognize them at all.
98% Latino.
98.
People of African ancestry, Asian.
Asian, yes. Right. There you go.
There's a long history of exclusion when it comes to the industry dealing with the parking production assistants and coordinators. You know, recently, both the state and the city passed $90 million in tax incentives. With the tax incentives on the city level, there is a social responsibility component where the city has set up a film and TV diversity working group, which is looking at the issues of diversity within the industry. We believe that recognition of the union of the parking PAs and coordinators will help the level of playing field. And, you know, because this is the most diverse group of workers on location, on these production jobs out in the streets. So, you know, some of these studios are on this working group, and, you know, they have responsibility to really take this issue very seriously, because they shouldn't miss this opportunity. You know, if they do, they're going to really undermine any hard work that they decide to put into this working group.
Now, I can just see Sam Waterston and all of these elite members of the commercial and the TV and movies like, hey, Will, brother, out there just saying, hey, our brothers absolutely need the right to unionize, and they need a step system. They need a promotion system.
We need a system.
So tell me something. What is the reality of the support that you're getting within the industry, Matthew? And by the way, why are you calling him Mark?
That's all. We go
way back.
A lot of listeners,
that's how they know it.
Say you mispronounced his name.
No.
Okay. I have an alias.
What kind of support are you getting?
Well, over the last several weeks, we've been doing job site rally ups where we've been talking to the rank and file union members on the different jobs that are going on throughout the city. The feedback has been very positive and supportive, and we really appreciate it. We've also been garnering support from elected officials and religious leaders and community leaders
have really stepped up for
civil
us.
Rights, yes. Leaders. So the feedback's been very positive. The story's out there. People, you want to help.
But what about the unions and the other unions in the industry?
Well, as I said before, the rank and file members at each of the unions have been very supportive.
Now, the UAW is out there working. We want our brothers to unionize. I will tell you, I'm kind of staggered. I'm staggered. I'm staggered by hearing people talk about, although I shouldn't be because I've certainly done this enough, people who've worked 12 and 16 years. I will tell you,
But let me say this also. I want you to think about it. Like you said, I came in this business 16 years ago. The rate back then was $75 a shift. Now, you're looking at $2,000 and on the doorstep.
God, and it's $125.
On the doorstep of $2,007, and it's $125 now.
Right.
And mind you, the cost of living has went up tremendously. And still, this industry still stands and says, we do not want to recognize you. We do not want to give you a better way of life. We want to keep you right where you are. And we are the minority workforce. We are the whole diversity.
Right. And if you look, if you ask a lot of people that work in the offices, they will say to you, is parking important? Now, how can you come out and say, is parking important when how do you think the trucks got there to park in the first place?
We're the ambassadors.
So we want respect on the job. We want to deal with the horrible low pay, the limited or no benefits. We want to raise the level of the profession, deal with the dangerous working conditions, job security, basic human needs. You want a union?
We are no longer invisible. We are here. We're going to be here. The UAW stood behind us. They are with us. We have people out there listening to this program right now that stand behind us. We want all the support that we can get because we will win this fight.
And Ted, if people want to get in contact with the union in terms of offering support, who do they call? Who do they email? What do they do?
They can call me at 212-529-2580.
And once again, like I said, we will win this fight.
We'd like to thank you all and Ted Feng for being with us. We want to make sure you get a union. Lights, cameras, rally, and unionize.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure, my brothers.
All right.
I'm Mimi Rosenberg with Ken Nash for Building Bridges.